I was on Twitter and everyone was like, Capital's like, what is happening?
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
It's just a measure of how their season has been going. They can't catch a break no matter how hard they're trying.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performance was just lacked that intensity.
Yeah, the performance rankings. So effectively, we start with the really crap and then we end up with Rachel Blackmore.
Well, we put the entire sport of rugby in the red. I think it's more specific and like Premier League.
Okay, so the Premier League is in the red initially. If we can get our performance rankings back up there again.
The Premier League is in the red. We can start with the Premier League's
in the red. Okay, and rugby's in the red. So we're just putting entire entities in the red here. VAR is kind of in the orange, which I think is very fair. I hate VAR, but I could see the plus and minuses. Ken Early's a very good article about the game yesterday, the Spurs-Liverpool game, which we talked about, which we obviously had as commentary here with Nathan and Brian. And I think, as Brian said, it was a bit of a mad game. It was a mad game on many levels, particularly on the VAR-related score, because it could tear you apart, VAR, yesterday, the pluses and the minuses. Celtic has put in because Enda Call is here, basically.
That's basically what's happened.
And he's going to...
They bullied someone to some trophy yesterday, some other smaller Scottish entity. Like Dublin winning an All-Ireland type of thing, like it's like, well, you have, you know,
Dublin winning a county anthem shield type thing,
like. Sort of something like that.
And will I think be here? Allegations that he's actually just here in studio today to talk about Celtic have yet to
flag
be
flag out there, I think, actually.
And then we'll talk obviously the wonderful Rachel Blackmore. Okay, then the Premier League, you mentioned it there. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose they are in the red in the sense of in sticky territory, you know, extremely sticky territory. And I think the fear is that, like, the Premier... Well, not the fear, the expectation is that they will do everything to make sure the Premier League survives because it's so valuable. You know, they don't want to get into the issues with sort of broadcasters, but is the price of continuing. Although, as I said, as I spoke to you there, it seems like initially they're more so looking today at these festive round of fixtures, but is that discussion going to broaden out to closed doors games again, you know, to restrict attendances? You'd hope that it doesn't have to go to that, or you'd hope that if it does have to go there, it's phased, you know, that you start off. Now, I know there's again, like, even our vaccination rates here relative to the UK are considerably higher. And you've referenced it there. You're still talking about, you know, the 5,000 cap that's going to be on some big events coming up.
It was actually noticeable at the rugby yesterday, the Leicester game, that, like, there were just a lot of people just didn't turn up.
Yeah, no, I think Nathan referenced that in the commentary for Spurs and Liverpool as well, too, you know. So I don't know. Like, I do to a degree have a bit of sympathy for the Premier League authorities because next year, because of the World Cup in Qatar, the schedule's a bit all over the shop. Now, they were also pretty determined to ensure that the Premier League survives as much as possible. And as a result, the players are playing the Premier League and then they're playing the World Cup the following seven or 8 days later.
So we'll say, you know, the Nation League fixtures are in June. So what break are actually these players getting at all next year if they're playing the Premier League right up the World Cup? So they get a little break between May and June, is it?
No, the Premier League... The Nations League, finishes on the 14th of June. And then, no, their break will be between then and the next season starting. And it's starting a bit earlier. The Premier League season, which normally begins in mid-August, is basically going to start...
Let's have a think about this. So
June. The last couple of weeks of June and early July.
So when did Damien Duff have the Shells lads in with the view to February start?
Here we go.
Year.
It was their first completely obscure league wide reference.
So he has them in like what?
He had them in the gym the day after the FAI Cup final.
So if you have 6 weeks to prepare for the start of the season, which isn't that much, what do you do then? Do you just say, oh, well, take 2 weeks off or take a week off?
To be fair, right, the big Premier League clubs that are used to doing this in major tournament summers, what will happen is the non-internationals will be in earlier and then those who've been on international duty will come in. Now, see, we're talking about the Nations League here as though it's of big importance, which it is to Ireland, but to other countries it won't be. So you'll actually see a lot of bigger players probably not play in the Nations League that summer with a view to, like, even a team like England that's in the World Cup, is it in their interest to go full tilted Nations League With certain players who might have had a difficult season, you know, with a view to them being okay come November. And that's going to be part of the equation next year. It's going to be a real, like, the sort of the sports science and the balancing and managing the loads of players is going to be huge. And this is would be obviously the concern. I think there is supposed to be a winter break in the Premier League in sort of late January, early February, which is timed in with the sort of culmination of the African Cup of Nations, and also not in Europe but in other jurisdictions there's delayed qualifying matches. But the question mark is now is will they just have to try and insert some games and play without your internationals, like almost like the MLS where they play on without loads of internationals.
And getting back to Saturday, obviously the Villa game was called off, the guts of 2 hours before kickoff. So and this was a point that was made in the show yesterday that you know, I think it was Kieran Cunningham made it on the pay-per-view. It was like, if you're a journalist going into these games, you kind of have to show your COVID pass or whatever. And he was sort of suggesting that players have a responsibility to the fans as well, and the fans who basically, you know, had a game called off 2 hours beforehand, this is a mess, like, you know, at any level.
Well, yeah, and I think you referenced it yesterday. I mean, you just can't run away from the fact that the Premier League's vaccination rates, or the vaccination rates of footballers in the UK, are low. Like, you know, it's something was at 68% double jab. Now, they were suggesting there'll be new data released this week that might show that that's gone up. But even still, you have a sort of a high enough cohort there that haven't gone that route. It's going to be a while before they're going to actually, I mean, they can't be boosted until they they get their first couple of jabs, you know. So it's going to be a while. And I think there was a story at the weekend about you know, some players who are just resisting it. You know, one.
Do you think they're stupid, or do you have any sympathy for them?
Stupid's a strong word.
Like, but do you think if they're following like idiots in social media or whatever? I don't know. I just don't see an overwhelming.
See,
case
I feel uncomfortable by saying that because, like, I
you're no expert on vaccines.
Well, though. No, and I think some people are just, they are, and it sounds very patronising, but they're just being impressionable and they're being followed. As I said, we can just come here and all just push forward the same view, and you can understand how that sort of can antagonise people in a way. But, like, as I said, in some cases, I don't know if it's like they're not anti-vaxxers or something. It's just purely, like, I'll be grand, like, you know. And in a lot of them, it's a reflection of the a quite common view in their age group. In England, it's like sometimes it's a big football thing because that's like it is actually now in danger of affecting their employment, and this is part of the thing they're even talking about today, that potentially unvaccinated players will have to travel separately to games and only spend a very limited period of time. So then they do actually end up becoming sort of pariahs, and as a result, they need to be able to sort of fully explain their views. So there will be ones who just have strong views in it, but I suspect there's just a couple who are just sort of going along with the flow, who probably aren't, like, I think this, I have my own opinions on it, but, like, you know, they are sort of following in some cases, like, you know, they're following what they consider to be whatever advice they've got from, like, Matt Letizia or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Also, a lot of people in their 20s haven't gotten the vaccine here because they're kind of thinking, well, you know, I'm young and so forth. And maybe there's an element of that. We're going to have to move on, though, to rugby as well.
But it's a similar debate. Like, yeah, the rugby one is very similar.
The rugby one, we won't hang on this. But see, the problem with the rugby is that you've obviously got the Leinster situation where the game is called off. You have walkovers as well. Then you have the situation where you know, the Connacht went over to Leicester yesterday, the game went ahead, but they are, like, Gerry Thornley has a good article in the Times in this, and obviously neither of us is a rugby expert, but they're really going to struggle to fulfil the fixtures because this time last season, the same competition, they'd actually more games played, and obviously, Dan, this is it's not quite the same as in football because they've given walkovers as well. Leinster were very annoyed because they had a kind of an argument that their game shouldn't have been called off. And again, it's just a messy, messy situation.
Well, the one thing about the rugby one, I was trying to kind of read up on it sort of this morning, that, yeah, like Leinster have a pretty good case in the sense that, like, there was both teams had COVID issues in their camp. Montpellier and Leinster.
Yeah.
Leinster were willing to fulfil the fixture with a 23 that appeared to be clear.
They argued that similar circumstance applied to Wasps on the eve of their game against Munster, which went ahead.
Which went ahead, yeah.
So all of the, yeah.
And then all the French teams had their games postponed sort of unilaterally, like, by something that you couldn't avoid. And those games are being voided, whereas Leinster have suffered 28-0. Well, it doesn't really make any sense at all. Right? Now, I think though, And we've probably, I don't know, I'm going to bring this back, of course, to our League of Ireland parish. Like, I remember at the start of last season, they had to put in protocols, you know, and this is what happens. And you sort of live and die by them a bit. But then what happens is you will have, like, instances where people are just like, well, hang on, this is exceptional claims. And it seems like in the rugby case, they're just, they're trying their best to follow the rules that they put in. Mm. But then you see real life situations happening, like that French thing and the shutdown at the last minute, and you realise that yes, you have your rules and you can be a slave to your rules, but you have to show a degree of flexibility to sort of events that are almost sort of beyond anyone's control.
Yeah.
And so I can see where the authorities are coming from, but it just doesn't look like a consistent or a good application at all.
Next in the performance rankings, if we can get them up on the screen,
can't
there.
Remember what is there?
Well, I'm still not actually. We kind of run this show, like, particularly when it's obviously you and I. We run it on a kind of a minute by minute basis, so we can't actually confirm if in the call definitely been suited.
Have you not memorized what's coming up? You don't actually need the screen. The slides to be put on screen.
Talk to the audience. Oh God! Like the second Simpsons reference.
Celtic Rachel Blackmore. Like we know what's coming here.
Okay, we could. Endicott is edging towards the room. I suspect a surreptitious entrance.
He's actually got a Japanese flag wrapped around him. Yeah. That's what he has.
Like, what a goal, by the way.
Well, let's VAR.
Let's talk. Dan, okay, I don't like VAR, but you could be kind of...
I don't like debates about VAR, to be honest.
No, but in fairness now... We'll talk about Ken Early's article yesterday where he, when I opened up, he just speaks about the game, how mad it was. There were so many kind of debatable decisions in this game, but it was also... The kind of the new relationship the referees have with VAR, where they kind of make on the spot decisions, some of them to do with penalties that may or may not be given, and then basically the game goes on. In one instance, Dele Alli had a very strong penalty claim. Liverpool then went down the pitch and scored. That went to VAR for a potential handball on Salah. But I suppose most controversially about the game yesterday were the non-red card of Harry Kane and then the red card of the guy Harry Kane should have been sent off for fouling Robertson. So as Brian Carrick said, he put it better than anyone ever could. It was a mad game.
It was a mad game. I mean, and as like it was sort of a reminder of like, would it have been a different game with no crowd there? Of course it would.
Mm.
You know, and that's what you don't want to lose. I mean, to debate the whole VAR concept, I mean, the whole point is, and you had it with the Newcastle Man City game as well, with the penalty that should have been, and the issue is probably the sort of the referral system. Why weren't certain things referred? Is there a fear around certain referees that they don't like their decisions being referred, which seems to be part of the commentary around Martin Atkinson over the weekend?
Well, Jurgen Klopp was livid with
Paul Tierney.
With Paul Tierney, yeah.
And there's a bit
he pulled out the old racing one. You've never ridden a horse like that. The jockeys used to say to the journalists, he said, you don't play football. You don't understand football. Like Klopp's mask often slips in the moment of like a defeat or 2 points drop like this, and I'm not sure he's quite as nice as the guy that he comes across as.
That's your hot take.
Klopp,
not a good lad, says Johnny. Yeah. But we can package that.
He's
one.
An okay lad. He wouldn't pay for dinner today.
Well, yeah, I think he would actually.
Maybe he would.
He would. He's been good on vaccines and stuff.
He has been good on vaccines, to be fair.
I just think the referee have
a bad day?
I just think like Klopp is not that he's. It's just that he's a competitor and he's a bad loser.
He's a bad loser.
So like Ferguson was brilliant at being absolutely cranky and irrational and sort of one-eyed, and that's what all good managers are like when it comes to their own, you know, to their own situation. And like that's, yeah, the mask slips, but I mean, I don't think he'd be successful if he actually existed in that permanent state of giddy happiness that we see sometimes.
Yeah,
he wouldn't actually be respected, I don't think, by players if that was his 100% default setting.
I asked Brian this yesterday, if you could bring in VAR to the League of Ireland, would you?
I mean, they don't even have Wi-Fi in a lot of the grounds, Johnny. Like,
if you could bring in VAR, one thing
I would like to go to, like, including Pat's actually, and a couple of places where it's just
Dickie,
like
no Wi-Fi.
So like VAR, right? You would spend your whole time buffering. Right, yeah. That would be the whole issue. So, like, do you know what I mean? You'd have that big delay of waiting for the thing. You'd just be actually waiting. Or, you know, one of those old dial-up sounds they used to have back in the day where like, someone lifts the phone.
Do you know the old dial-up, the call is cut off. The old dial-up, if you ring our home number in Galway, you'll still get me given a recording of my voice when I was about 16 apologising that basically the phone line's being in use probably by the internet here. So if I ever want to go like a Quantum Leap episode or like Back to the Future, I just ring home and hope that somebody's on
the phone. Quantum Leap. Do you remember Quantum Leap?
I love loved it. Scott Bakula. Loved it.
Remember Al in the white suit? Oh, he was the star of every show.
He actually passed away very recently. Actor, yeah, in his 80s. Some man who didn't pass away is Enda Coll. Look at him there.
I should hope so, Johnny.
Or pass out, actually.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. You wanted to talk about Celtic. Dan and I probably didn't, but...
I do agree with Dan here, though, on the VAR before we get into Celtic. Like, Klopp is an angry person. He just... Like, people always see him as this happy-go-lucky guy, but you don't get to that level without having some sort of bastard in you. And I think Klopp has that in him. He's an angry German man at the same time.
What's that supposed to mean?
Hang on.
He's a very intimidating guy. Like, have you ever seen Klopp? He's massive. He's really tall. So he has a bit of an air about him. And if he's screaming at you, you know, he has a bit of authority about him. So always be happy.
We still have 14 minutes, much of which you want to obviously bring up the League Cup final yesterday. But just on the game itself... where do you stand on the VAR thing? Because it just showed the complexities of it as well. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong. People say, oh, there's so much money at stake. Like, but I loved the fact that in football, you know, referees will obviously make wrong decisions, but it's just this kind of like waiting after a goal now to figure out. Like, even so the goal that's like Robertson's goal, what a game he had, by the way. He was involved in everything. Robertson's goal, unbelievable cross by Trent. But then you're like, well, this could go back to several things here. I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting. And as the mother would say, it takes the good out of it.
Yeah, I think if you weren't looking at the Salah incident, you're probably looking at an offside for Robertson there as well. So, like, it's an interesting one. I think I was saying to you off air that people hear the word VAR and take the human aspect out of it. I think everyone always thinks that, you know, it's just this VAR is always watching, but it's a human watching behind that there. So there's always that level of human error that's going to go into it as well. And you're talking about the exact same referees that are on the pitch who are not at the level that they were 10, 15 years ago, but I saw Miguel...
Referees aren't at the level.
No, not at all. The referee standards have dropped dramatically over the last couple of years. I mean, there's a reason why you're not seeing... I mean, you get the odd, Martin Atkinson might get a big game in Europe, but there's not too many British referees that are getting big games in world football anymore, and I think that's really apt, and it shows you the standard of the refereeing in Britain as a whole. And the VAR is an interesting one because, like, the League of Ireland doesn't have it. Scotland doesn't even have it yet either. And I find myself enjoying Scottish football more and more these days because I don't have to sit there and wait to see if there's going to be something that's going to call off this goal.
Yeah, a couple of points. I remember Dan putting up a poll for League of Ireland fans when I was on Twitter, and like 85-90% of them didn't want VAR. But would you agree with end on the referees there?
The referee?
Standard of referee.
Well, no.
I think that's a big comment because...
It seems to be the recurring point at the moment that the refereeing standards are poor. But as I said, like, the debate around VAR is also the management of VAR as well. But, you know, it's not just... Like, it's decision making, but it's also how they handle the system, which I thought they'd sort of tightened up at the start of the season. Because if you remember, VAR at the Euros was generally managed pretty well. You know, it was, and that was with the point people said, well, this was like sort of elite European referees and also certain methods of sort of, you know, when to refer and how to handle it. And it felt like at the start of the season they'd got on top of it, but, you know, that's clearly not the case now.
Harry Kane, like, is that just...
See, refereeing standards is a general debate. I don't know. Like, it just, as a discussion, it sort of tends to lose me after a while. Like, we've had massive problems in the League of Ireland this season and stuff, and you can dig into it and the reasons behind it. But then a lot of people there would say, well, actually, you know, this isn't their full time job. Like, Mark Burcham had come over from England and was like, they need to be met full time. I mean, you have this with the top sort of English referees, and yet you still have bad decisions.
Yeah, well, like, again, you're talking about humans here, so natural bias comes into it, regardless of the level. Like, it really does, and Jamie Redknapp referenced that as well. The fact that Harry Kane is the England captain, and he says if he's not the England captain, he gets sent off for that. Harry Kane does get away with a lot of stuff. We talked about during the Euros, you know, the little thing where he doesn't jump for a header, the defender comes over and he goes down and gets a foul. That was the Harry Kane thing. And he was getting the free every time, whereas he was at wrong and he could have seriously injured someone. I think Harry Kane does get preferential treatment from referees in England. It's very hard to see
how that's not a red card. I mean, I know that you're showing...
It's more of a red card than Robertson's.
Oh, 100%. But it's not a whataboutery here. But that, like, I think if you ask people, 90-95% of people would say that's a red card. It was over the... You know, but anyway, let's talk Celtic. Speaking of... Enda Coll, this is why you're here.
Yeah, so Celtic are back in the trophy list now in Scotland. Johnny, League Cup champions from yesterday. 2-1 win against Hibs in the League Cup final
with an unbelievable winning goal.
Oh, so it was incredible. And the Kyogo Furuhashi story is quite interesting because he came from Japan. He was a favourite of Ange Postecoglou's in the J League, and he's been like absolutely outstanding player of the season so far. He's taken the league by storm, and there was a goal that he had that was offside against Hearts, and it was very marginal. We're talking about VAR. The week of barrage of media outrage at this, the chief of the Scotland refereeing went on the radio. Unprecedented stuff. He's now, like, in the last 10 years, I can remember him being on once or twice. He went on the radio onto BBC to talk about this offside. So there's been a lot of pressure put on Kyogo over the last couple of weeks, and he barely fit going into this game. Pulled his hamstring, or tweaked his hamstring a couple of weeks ago, and pulls out two winning goals in the Scottish League Cup final for Postecoglou's first trophy. So, like, it was really extraordinary stuff from him.
What's in terms of the overall scheme of things, how big is this trophy for Celtic in terms of their rebuilding?
It's an interesting one because I think it's Celtic's 14th consecutive win in Hampden. So when you're in Hampden, you're playing for a trophy. So in the grand scheme of things, the League Cup doesn't really mean that much to Celtic. But for this year, for context of where they were last year, didn't win any trophies. The league was a mess. Neil Lennon, his tenure ended just terribly in the end, and the club was in a state of flux at the end of the season. Their captain leaves, Scott Brown left the club. Chris Ryer, their best defender, went to Brentford. Austin Edward went to Crystal Palace, top goal scorer for the last 3 years. And Ryan Christie went to Bournemouth. And you're thinking, the club was a mess. There was a rebuild supposed to happen. They're losing all their key players. This season could really be a struggle. Then you add in the Eddie Howe situation that dragged on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and he eventually didn't come to the club. And you landed on Ange Postecoglou, and people were like, who is this guy? Comes into the club. The transformation has been insane. 11 transfers coming into the club, and for him to have steadied the ship to the point that he has now has been incredibly impressive. And I know Celtic are obviously the dominant club in Scotland, and they have a lot more money than the Ross Counties or the Hibs even, but to have progressed the club to the point that he has them now, and they're only at the start of it, I'm really excited to see what's going to happen.
Celtic is just, it seems to me, they're either in a state of like crisis or euphoria.
Very rare
there's a middle ground. When does Celtic have, unless maybe when Rangers were gone and they were just meandering through winning leagues and like what was the definition of success, but like you had all the stuff with the CEO, and like it just always seems like there's something going on with Celtic, and it's either really good or really bad. The extreme, like the Irish national team or something, there's no on the fence opinion. It's always like it's one or the other.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, and people always throw that label of like your two club league over at Celtic and Rangers, but that in itself brings a lot of pressure because Celtic lose 3 games in a season and they could lose a league. So the stakes are higher than ever when it comes to these games, especially when Rangers are on par with them and they're winning every game. So, yes, it may be a two-horse league. Yes, you may have a lot of fixtures that you can ride through. But if you lose more than 3 games in a season, you're probably going to lose the league. So it's a lot more pressurized than people give it credit for. And the fact that Glasgow is such a melting box of opinion, just adds everything else. You just need to be a big character for it.
Just briefly as well, Linda, with obviously Liam Scales getting some game time, as he did again yesterday for Celtic, and this kind of switch from League of Ireland to the SPL seems to be becoming a bit of a thing now. Do you think there'll be there are a lot of kind of maybe lapsed Celtic fans in Ireland who just like, because of the nature itself of the SPL, just kind of tend to lose interest? Do you think there will be more interest in it? Because, as you say, Celtic are playing quite good football at the moment as well.
I don't think so. I think the Premier League has taken over from that. Even the likes of Donegal that has natural like links with Celtic over the last couple of decades, you're seeing less and less Celtic fans come out of it. I think the Premier League's just taken over. And in the same way that the League of Ireland kind of struggles to compete with it, so does the Scottish League. And the Premier League, at least, you know, the SPFL cannot offer the same level of football that the Premier League can offer. So the step up from the League of Ireland is not that insane leap that you're taking with the Premier League. But the likes of Scales, just on Scales himself, I mean, I was sceptical about the nature of that transfer, as were a lot of Celtic fans.
The sense of the link between
Dermot
the clubs.
Desmond links. But he's taken, he's gotten an opportunity because there's a lot of injuries. But he now seems to be the second choice left back, which is very interesting,
and
because Greg Taylor was out injured for a long time, and it looked like Juranovic, which was a new signing, he came in at right back, but with Anthony Ralston playing really well, he's been the natural right back, and Juranovic been switched to the left. But now it seems that with Greg Taylor back, he'll be the first left back. But Scales is that next step down now. If it, it seems that he's even leapfrogged the likes of Ballingoli, who has been at the club for a while.
Left back
can I ask you on that then? Because the Ireland situation, right? So we've a load of like players who are playing left wing back at the moment in England. I think even Callum O'Dowd is playing a bit of left wing back at the moment. Ryan Manning, and obviously the two who've been sort of fighting out for the position, Enda Stevens and James McLean. And where is Scales in that argument now?
I think he's still down the list. Like, you know, as Enda says, like Scales, and it's interesting because I watched the Betis game, and what was the other game? He played a good bit off the bench. He scored. Was it the?
He got the third goal.
Got a goal.
Who was that against? End of the 3-0.
Was it Dundee?
Was it Dundee United?
Dundee United.
But I know. I still think like McLean scored a brilliant goal at the weekend
to win the game. Yeah,
he going to Wigan. He's in terrific form. And Enda Stevens, I think like Scales is number four. Realistically, like Ryan Manning would be third, and Scales would be fourth. And again, like there's sort of nuances to the position. Like you watch Celtic play. And it's interesting that the fullbacks are very inverted, which sort of means that they have to go in and take positions in midfield all the time. But I think Scales is quite suited to that, because with Rovers as a left wing back, he used to do that a lot as well. You'd see him really drifting in field. So the position, some of the positions he'd been asked to take up aren't dissimilar, but as part of a back four. Now that shows the Celtic are a super attacking team, you know. And then the European games was a bit more of a contrast. And my concern for him would have been, even that game against Betis, defending in a back four at that level. He played a couple of times for the 21s and that's it. So, there's going to be challenges there for him along the way. But I think the crucial one is that he's got over the hump of just not being involved, and he's got minutes. You can see positive reaction from fans when he does play. So he's a little bit more proven now, when there was that sort of scepticism around his signing and the traditional thing. And I've seen Enda speak about this before. Like sometimes SPFL fans can speak about the League of Ireland in the same way that the Premier League fans speak about the SPFL. You know, and like it's
I think James Scales McGrath's-
Scales had been a part of a very good Ireland 21 squad. You know, he wasn't a tourist, like, you know, coming into where he was going to.
And then just one word: is Celtic won the league?
Oh, it's a difficult one. Like,
why do people respond to it? Like, when you're asked one word, why do you say?
Just
like,
to be clear, Andy, yes or no would have sufficed for that. Yeah.
I think they can, and again, it comes down to this.
Always
picture.
A caveat. There's always a caveat.
They're playing Rangers
the media
in January,
pro now. Yeah.
So I think it's the 3rd of January is the Old Firm.
Is that a midweek or a weekend game? So that's a weekend game.
I think it's a weekend game. It's usually on a Sunday.
3rd of January.
It'd be interesting to see the Irish interest in that now.
So it's probably the 2nd of January then. It's usually a Sunday game at 12 o'clock. So I can't see Scales playing.
Won't be watching the boozer anyway.
No, will not.
Well, you could be.
It's usually 12 o'clock.
There's not a chance of an Old Firm game at 8 o'clock in the evening.
That's true.
That's
sorry.
The whole point.
Yeah. That shows how much I'm following Scottish football these days. But I hate those 12 o'clock kickoffs. I hate them with a passion.
I know.
Same. Anyway, let's get to
Rachel
the end. Rachel Blackmore, you're going to the Lep on the 28th, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah, you weren't until the.
Am I going to be one of the 5,000?
I have to have a word with you about that. Yeah. Actually, Rachel Blackmore. I mean, the RTE Awards were obviously dominated by basically the female exponents of the sport, and this was no surprise. But it wasn't the only award.
She won the BBC Overseas one.
First
ever Irish person to win the BBC World Personality. Of course, you have the classic lot of people quite confused. Why wasn't she in for the main one? Which is, of course, just the classic geopolitical.
Emma Raducanu.
Are you British or not? Well, no, it's just because she's not British, Johnny. That would have been the main reason why she wouldn't have been up for it. Not because Emma Raducanu won it, but that's the confusion that some people would have. So she's the first Irish winner. So she's up there with.
There are some good names.
You know, just pretty much every famous sports person of recent times. And Rachel's in there. And you know, as a racing sort of a racing journalist and someone who follows the sport closely, that it struggles to break the mainstream in the UK. Now, it's not that unusual over here, like for a jockey to win a big award. You know, because they are celebrated and they're put on that pedestal, but it's really difficult in the UK, and it shows the extent to which her name really means something over there. And yes, Manila Times and the National would have been the real sort of front page moment for her, but even the six winners, Cheltenham, and to the point where, you know,
she had more winners than Britain.
Yeah, so you know what people are like they have their jockeys that they latch onto, that they trust, you know, AP, people who just like back AP and whatever, back Ruby, and like Rachel is sort of on that status now, and that's so difficult to do. I'm not even going to get into the debate about should she have won relative to other candidates, because those end of year awards, like, you end up sort of doing down the achievements of people who've done amazingly well to make your point. But I think certainly Rachel Blackmore for me is deserving all the praise that's coming her way, because to be competing at the level she does, to the point where, yes, there's a big gender discussion around, like, isn't it great that there's like 6 out of 8 candidates and the RT one are female and stuff, but you and me would know who follow the sport every day. You don't actually just think of her as a female job. You know, like, that's not actually really, yes, from the external view, that's part of it, but certainly, and you know, sometimes like bias that people have, it's unconscious, right?
Totally.
They will scan a race card or something.
Yeah.
And there was a part of them that would have seen a female jockey.
Conversely, it was like, Nina, get me out in the bumper.
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's changed. But I'm just saying that people would see a female jockey, and there would have been, you know, this would be like, oh, I'm not so sure about that. Wouldn't even be on your radar now. Wouldn't even, like, see Rachel Blackmore. It wouldn't, like, just, it's not even there. And I think even for other names coming through as well, I think that's quite important, although there probably should be more of them.
Yeah.
It's another debate, isn't it?
Well, that's for another day, but I couldn't agree more with you there. From one Tipperary colossus to another, next up, Alan Quinlan.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.